Whenever I agree to do a sermon, and I've done several, the topic of the sermon is suddenly ubiquitous in my world. It seems to be everywhere. It's like when you're expecting a baby and all of a sudden the number of pregnant women in strollers around you just kind of explodes. And this is the case with this month's topic, trust. I'm seeing references to it everywhere. Some would say that when this happens, it's God or the universe speaking to us. And others say that God is always speaking to us. It's just that we're usually not listening. Trust. There are songs about it. We heard two of them this morning, one by Billy Joel and the other by Etta James. There are lyrics in the songs that we sing. Politicians are always tossing the term around and have long done that. During the Cold War, President Reagan used the catchphrase, trust but verify, to talk about their relationship with the Soviet Union. Trust is in the headlines again. This past week, California Senator Adam Schiff announced that the Signalgate fiasco was evidence that we can't trust those who are expected to keep us safe. Last weekend, my wife Joan and my daughter Kelly and I took a road trip to Charleston, South Carolina to visit my sister. And as we're driving down I-95, there are a good number of billboards who sought my trust. There was one promoting the most trusted realtor in North Carolina. Another told passerby that we could trust a law firm to secure a 7-figure legal settlement. And because we were driving through the Bible Belt, more than a few billboards were telling me to trust in the Lord or trust in God, or more declarative, in God we trust. In God we trust. It's on t-shirts and bumper stickers. I've seen in God we trust, everyone else bring data. In God we trust, all others must pay cash. In God we trust, everyone else we monitor, or everyone else we polygraph, or everyone else needs ID, just to name a few. The phrase in God we trust began showing up on U.S. currency at about the time of the Civil War. Some leaders at the time thought that by putting the phrase on our money, that would, as Pennsylvania clergyman M.R. Watkinson wrote, that would place us openly under the divine protection. Perhaps as well, some leaders felt the need to remind the citizens of our country that despite all of the death and destruction that we rained down on our fellow countrymen during the Civil War, that we as a nation were still good people, and that we could count on an all-powerful force to have our back, perhaps. Those four words, in God we trust, remain on our bills and coins today. In 1956, nearly 100 years after it first appeared on our money, in God we trust, by an act of Congress, became the official motto of the United States. And here's a fun fact. The motto, in God we trust, replaced E pluribus unum, a Latin expression that means out of many, one. And for most of our history, out of many, one was what our country was about. And it's fair to ask, which phrase is a more useful reminder of who we are as a people and what that means for how we should behave and how we should treat each other and how we should think about diversity and inclusion? In God we trust. Talking about God to a congregation of Unitarian Universalists is always a bit tricky, because we're not universal in our belief in or about God. For some of us, there most certainly is a God, or the one God, and we get strength and guidance from her or him, sometimes every day, sometimes just when we need it most. For others of us, we are sure there is no God, that the existence of God defies logic and evidence. And still others of us believe that there is something that is greater than us, a presence, a force, a spirit, but we pull up short of the Judeo-Christian personification of that something as God. All of those truths are welcomed and embraced. After all, E pluribus unum, out of many, one. So when I talk today about trusting someone or something besides God, feel free to think of it as in addition to God, or think of it instead as instead of God. Your choice, you do you. Before I go any further, I want to make a distinction between trust and faith. In my research, I found this description, which really resonates with me. Faith is a belief in someone or something, even without proof. While trust is a feeling of confidence based on experience or evidence. Faith is the highest level of trust. It is trusting someone or something, even when all logic and evidence point to the contrary. And my words now, faith depends on convincing communication. Trust depends on consistent action. At times, I envy those in my family and my circle of friends that have a strong faith. If you've got it, it can be very clarifying, very calming. But if you need evidence and experience, those prerequisites of trust, that can make things more challenging, but in my view, also more authentic. For the past 25 years, the global communications consultant Edelman has produced and published annually what it calls the Edelman Trust Barometer. It's a measure of the trust that people around the world have in various institutions, namely business, government, nonprofits, and the media, to do what is right. This year's survey, which is titled Trust and the Crisis of Grievance, took place online from last October to mid-November last year and included responses from 33,000 people across 28 countries. And the results are quite telling, if not particularly surprising. First, trust in institutions continues to decline around the world. Second, in the U.S., a strong majority, nearly 60%, have a moderate or high sense of grievance. And grievance is reflected in the survey by a belief from respondents that government and business make their lives harder and serve narrow interest, and wealthy people benefit unfairly from the system. Third, widespread grievance is eroding trust across the board. Those with a high sense of grievance distrust all four institutions, that is business, governments, nonprofits, and the media. And fourth, hostile activism is seen as a legitimate tool to drive change. To bring about change, 4 in 10 in the U.S. would approve of one or more of the following forms of hostile activism. Attacking people online, intentionally spreading disinformation, threatening or committing violence, or damaging public or private property. 4 in 10. The report concludes that when institutions can't be trusted to do what is right, grievances fester and outlooks darken. But with trust, optimism eclipses grievance. To dissipate grievance and increase optimism, organizations should prioritize and rebuild trust both within and externally. And of particular importance to UUCL, the report states, this is nonprofits' moment as the ethical leader, the only institution seen as a unifying force among those with a high sense of grievance and the institution with the highest trust among that group. So with that as a backdrop, there are four questions I'll explore this morning. First, does trust matter? Second, as individuals, who can and should we trust? Third, how can we collectively, as UUCL, become trusted? And fourth, what can we do as citizens to rebuild trust in our institutions? I got 10 minutes to do that. So first, does trust matter? Yes, it does. Trust me, it matters. Now, depending on your experience of me, am I trustworthy? Have I done or said something in the past that makes you suspicious of me? And depending on your prior experiences in the world, you are either ready to move on or you need some more information, some more evidence. Okay, so briefly, trust matters to both the giver and the receiver. We want to trust and to be trusted. It feels good to trust and be trusted. But trust is also a lubricant. It reduces friction and the energy required to overcome that friction in relationships and transactions, in business, within organizations, and in our personal lives. And it enables efficiency and effectiveness. Edelman conducts their annual trust survey because they understand that trust levels have a big impact on the ability of an organization to succeed. And I would say that applies to individuals as well. Reverend Ellis likes to use the expression moving at the speed of trust. A lack of trust slows down the process, slows down decision making, slows down progress. In so many ways, trust matters. The second question, as individuals, who can and should we trust? My answer to that question begins with a distinction I made earlier between trust and faith. Trust is a feeling of confidence based on experience or evidence. And that's an iterative process. When we trust something or someone and they validate that trust through their actions, the more we feel able to trust them again and more deeply. Dr. Brené Brown uses the acronym BRAVING, B-R-A-V-I-N-G, when talking about the components of trust. Boundaries, reliability, accountability, the vault, or the ability to keep confidences locked away, integrity, non-judgment, and generosity. So think about your experiences with home improvement contractors or with a friend that you just told something in confidence or with your life partner. Think about our elective representatives. Think about those in the building today and those joining us online. Which of them passed the braving test? I also think we need to be like the bird I talked about in Time for All Ages. We need to trust ourselves. Trust that we won't crash to the ground if the branch that we're sitting on suddenly breaks. Last week, a former colleague of mine that incidentally doesn't work for the government told me that he just got laid off. And after listening to him describe the experience and how he felt, I reminded him that he's a very talented individual and that he has the skills to find something else, something better. We all have skills and abilities that we don't always give ourselves credit for. And sometimes it takes a broken branch to realize we can fly. So on to the third question, how can we collectively as UUCL become trusted? The simple answer is we need to demonstrate that we are living our mission and are true to our values. So we normally have a banner on the wall that reflects our mission, but I'll remind you of what that is. Kindling the flame of love and justice to nurture and heal ourselves, each other, and our world. Are we living it? Our professed values, those that were adopted by the Unitarian Universalist Association last year, are generosity, interdependence, equity, justice, transformation, and pluralism, with love at the center of it all. Can you just leave that up there for a minute, if you would? The adopted text from the UUA of these values includes a covenant, a commitment to action for each. Interdependence, for example, includes a covenant to protect Earth and all beings from exploitation. Justice includes a covenant to dismantle racism and all forms of systemic oppression. I see values as a guide for how we should all behave. A couple of weeks ago, I was talking to one of my Special Olympics basketball coaching colleagues, and we were discussing the various ways to combat what's coming out of Washington, and I got a little worked up about all the various things that we could or ought to be doing, and he said simply, or you could do one good thing every day. Now, we all have our own level of comfort with how to engage, and we all have a lot of other stuff going on in our lives. And maybe right now, all you can do is one good thing every day. That one good thing matters. It makes a difference. But if you're up for it, Get uncomfortable. Push a little bit harder. Go a little bit further than what you're comfortable with, than what you're used to. The times we are in, we require that more of us do more than ever before. Figure out how to advance our values, your values, in a way that works for you as an individual. For some, it's active resistance, it's activism. It's showing up at hands-off demonstrations or calling or writing your congressional representatives or your state delegates or your Loudoun County supervisors. Maybe it's wading into debates or professing your beliefs on social media. Or maybe it's making institutions that you believe in and trust, like this one, a bit stronger. And maybe it's some or all of the above. And that coincidentally is my answer to the fourth question as well. What can we do as citizens to rebuild trust in institutions? Our actions, big and small, will make those institutions more accountable and ultimately more trustworthy. And that sounds like a rather neat, straightforward recipe for saving our institutions. But it's not going to be easy. The Trump administration seems committed to rapidly dismantling many of the institutions that have helped to maintain stability in our society, including regulations that protect health, safety, environment, and well-being, agencies that prevent or respond to disasters, the scientific community, nonprofits that advance any number of worthy causes, and the social safety net that supports those less fortunate. That's not a political statement, that's a fact. And that is a lot to try to combat. And every day that goes by, the encroachment against our values seems to be getting deeper and deeper. And it's easy to feel helpless, and sometimes I do. You know, it's also March. It's springtime. And we're in the middle of my favorite sports tournament. College basketball is March Madness. So I'm going to close with a basketball analogy, and don't mind the guys that are coming up front now because they're getting ready for the song we're going to sing at the end. So I'm going to close with a basketball analogy. Imagine that you're in a game and your opponent has found a way to exploit the rules that you weren't prepared for, that you hadn't practiced against, that you didn't know was actually allowed by the officials. And as crazy as it seems, a lot of the fans in the arena are actually cheering for the other team. And they get off to a big lead early in the game. You and your teammates are scrambling to try to figure out what to do, and nothing you're doing is working. You get further and further behind, you go into halftime down by 25 points. During halftime, you try to regroup. You've seen a couple of weaknesses. Your coach tells you that you can win, but you really need to work hard, improve your defense, play team ball, trust your teammates, trust yourselves. And there's a glimmer of hope. You come out in the second half with new energy and a new strategy. You play even for a while, and the crowd starts to turn in your favor, and slowly you start to chip away at the lead. But the clock is ticking. There's an urgency in every play. Precious time is slipping away. Will there be enough time to pull out a win? Now, of course, it's not a perfect metaphor. This isn't a game. There's no buzzer beater. In fact, there's no buzzer. The outcome is not binary. It's not win or lose. People are getting hurt every day, and the potential for restoration continues to erode even as the need increases. So I'll leave you with a final thought, an optimistic thought. Comebacks are possible. Last night, one of the teams that was playing was down by 9 points with 3 minutes to go, which is tough to come back from. They ended up winning the game. Reminds us all that comebacks are possible. They happen all the time, in sports and in life. Comebacks require hard work. They require a sense of urgency, and they require trust in yourself and in your teammates. But they happen all the time. And I see one in our future.